Hi everyone, this is Abe from NYC Taxi News, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you or anyone you know has been hurt over the loss of the disastrous crash of the taxi medallion, you must listen to this show for the full hour. I'm sure you'll enjoy everything that's being said. The phone number you should know if you want to join into the class action lawsuit that is being fought for you is 212-JUSTICE or 212-587-8423. So here goes. Listen to the show. Listen to the whole hour. Thank you.
Yeah! I admit you've got the biggest brown eyes, and you know how to part your lips to tantalize. Sure.
And we're not going to eat out our huts anymore because we have on the line attorney John Norisberg. And attorney Norisberg has opened up a lawsuit against the TLC and former officers of the TLC, including Michael Bloomberg, who was mayor at the time. This is something we've been waiting for a long time. We want to know who's accountable for the horror that we've gone through over the last 6 or 7 years. Okay. I'd like to introduce John and Taxi Dave is here. Carolyn is here, and my name is Abe. I'm here. John, let me ask you one question, and then I'm going to ask Carolyn to take over for a while. And Dave, I'm sure Dave has a lot to say. Dave, by the way, is Taxi Dave. He had a newspaper, Taxi Insider, and he's currently part of Taxi and Livery Times. And he had a radio show on WOR and other radio stations. How many years, Dave?
On and off, the Taxi Dave Show and Taxi Insider was on for over 20 years.
20 years, right. Okay. But my one question to you, John, before we get started is your lawsuit, which I've read, hoping very much that you're very successful with this lawsuit. It seems that you're going to want other taxi drivers to join in. Is that correct?
Well, yes. The short answer is yes. We would want other people to join in. I mean, at this point, we have two named plaintiffs, and that's more than enough to go forward. But this is a class action lawsuit, and even if people don't formally, quote unquote, join in, they will automatically be included in the lawsuit if they're medallion owners and they fit the definition of the class that the court would ultimately approve.
Okay, well, would people like myself, who's a retired driver, and my medallion was originally bought in 1977, okay, and I had it, I have no debt personally on it, even though it's part of a corporation, a mini fleet, where my partner has debt. Would I be eligible for compensation with this lawsuit?
So the short answer is yes. You would fit into one of the subclasses that we have, which we have something that is recognized in the law. It's called the holder claim. And the holder claim is essentially it's a claim that you can make when you have an asset that you decided to hold on to as opposed to sell based on false representations by the people that own the asset, that control the asset. So, for example, in this case, if you were considering at some point before you retired in 2012, if you were considering possibly selling your medallion, but you decided to hold on to the medallion based on false, misleading, and dishonest statements by the TLC, at their auctions, prior to the auction, post-auctions, and so forth, that would arguably create a claim, a holder claim for someone such as yourself, where even though you didn't buy it during the class period, you elected not to sell it because of that. So one of our named plaintiffs, Galena, fits into that holder claim category, and we do believe that that's a viable claim in and of itself.
Okay, well, then I'm very glad. I'm even more glad that this lawsuit is taking place because I do fit into that. Okay. I'm going to let Carolyn now do some talking because she's very, very good at this.
I'd just like to say that this has been going on longer than World War II, this debacle that all the medallion owners have been going through and suffering. And numerous officials have admitted what happened. They wring their hands, and then they have another meeting or another study or another task force and so on. And then nothing ever happens that's meaningful. So I'm really glad, you know, that finally somebody did this, and in federal court, which seems like it goes quicker than state court. You can tell us about that if I'm right on that. And also that this is for over $2.5 billion, which is certainly attention-getting. And just to put it in context, I think New York City settles around $700 million a year in claims. So this is pretty impressive, $2.5 billion. The whole city budget is $100 billion now. So that would be a huge chunk if you won. Which
Why don't we have
do.
John explain how he got to that number?
Yes.
All right. So as large as that number sounds, it's actually conservative. And basically, that number comes from the analysis that Attorney General James made when she filed her notice of claim. She looked at how much money the city and TLC earned between 2004 and 2017, and she put that number at $855 million. The statute that we sued under is a civil RICO statute, and it allows for what the law calls treble damages, which in plain English means you triple what your actual losses were as a form of compensation. So you don't get punitive damages, but you get treble damages. So by simple multiplication of the numbers that Attorney James, General James put out there with 855, that's where the $2.5 billion comes from. But I just want to clarify that even that number is really arguably insufficient because the number that the Attorney General came up with looks strictly on how many dollars were generated from the medallion sales themselves during the time period and from the 5% transfer taxes on all transactions that the city charged during the class period on the secondary market. So what that leaves out is for those medallion owners that actually bought their medallions in good faith and then wound up taking a bath on them, they lost money that on the secondary market, it's possible now that they would have claims as well because their medallions are essentially worth zero. Even though nominally they might be worth $50,000, they're essentially worth zero. So the number $2.5 billion is, in my opinion, is not even the full story. I think when we do discovery and we actually look at the hard concrete numbers of how many medallion owners lost, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, I think the number is actually going to be much bigger when all is said and done.
Yeah, you could also say that the value of the entire franchise has been destroyed, which would be about $15 billion, because it's a very valuable franchise, and it has an extremely
right.
violent history. It hasn't been violent lately, but in the past, in the 1930s, it certainly was. We even had a mayor, Jimmy Walker, in 1927, who had to resign because he had attempted to sell the franchise to one company, Parma Lee, I think it was called, for his own personal gain, which is something that Bill de Blasio was so dumb. I mean, he just gave the franchise away. Or let's say it slip through his fingers, because I don't know how in charge he actually has been for the last 7.5 years. He's sort of hands-off. This actually goes back to Bloomberg, of course, your lawsuit. Is that correct, John? Is he one of the people you're
suing?
It goes
back. I mean, the lawsuit essentially starts with Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. He's really the architect, along with Dowse, prior to the 2004 auctions. I mean, that's the class period that we've defined it as 2004 through 2017. So it basically starts with Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm. And so what's unusual about your lawsuit is that you're starting in federal court. You're using the RICO statutes, which is new. That hasn't been tried in any of the other lawsuits. And as far as the fraud claims, the reason you're able to do that, even though it's come up before, is because it hasn't been addressed in federal court. Am I right on that?
Well, the reason why we're able to bring it up now is something under this statute, under the RICO statute, you're not required to bring a lawsuit until you have what's called in the law, quote, inquiry notice, end quote, which in plain English means you have to be put on notice of the fact that somebody has engaged in this fraudulent conduct before you're obligated to file a lawsuit and try to seek redress for those violations. In our case, what we are alleging is this class was not on inquiry notice until June 24, 2019, the beginning of the council hearings, when Councilman Torres and now Congressman Richie Torres laid it out crystal clear, starting with his opening statement, and really exposed the fraud and deception and dishonesty that was going on with TLC, that a lot of people, even highly knowledgeable medallion owners, really were not aware of and first learned about during the hearing. Now, the statute of limitations for a claim under RICO is 4 years from the date where you go on inquiry notice. So in our opinion, these claims are very much timely because we're filing well within the four-year period of inquiry notice, which started in June of 2019. So that is why we believe these claims are still timely, regardless of what other statutes of limitations might be out there for some of the common law, meaning not statutory fraud claims that were tried before.
Right. So do you want to tell us a little bit about the Roth report then and how that was missing for 10 years?
The Roth report is a smoking gun. I mean, it is a major centerpiece in this litigation. There's certain facts that just are beyond dispute. And some of those facts are as follows. In late 2010, Gary Roth, who was a policy analyst hired by TLC, he did an internal report, 5-page memorandum, and he laid out a number of very significant concerns that he had regarding the future of medallions and their value. And one thing in particular really jumped out. He said that as of 2010, the medallion was already overvalued. And remember, in 2010, the medallion was only at $700,000 in terms of a value. And he said, if you use that number and you just look at the actual cost that a medallion owner would have to undertake, one, to pay back that loan, and two, to service the car during the year, he estimated it would be $50,000 a year to service the mortgage, $40,000 a year for operational costs. And he estimated that a medallion owner would have to earn $100,000 just to be making a profit of $10,000. So if you look at it like that, I mean, you'd have to bring in $100,000 of fares basically to do a little better than breaking even before you can make any real money. He looked at that picture in 2010 and said, this is a problem. This is a problem because if medallion values actually go down in the future, medallion owners are going to find themselves, quote, underwater, end quote, meaning the money that they owe on the loans far exceeds the value of the actual medallion. And that is exactly what's happened, okay? So, within a few years of that report, the medallion values continue to escalate. They reached a point, I believe, of 1.25, 1.3 million somewhere in 2014. This was something that was not sustainable. And the TLC knew it was not sustainable all the way back in 2010. And yet they continued to falsely promote and advertise these medallions as better than the stock market and bragging about the $500,000 rate of return and things like that when they knew the truth. The truth had been forecasted by their own policy analysts back in 2010. And what's particularly troublesome, Carolyn, is that this report was kept hidden for 9 years. Okay, so it was something that nobody knew about. The public at large had no idea about it. Prospective medallion owners who were considering buying medallions at auctions had no idea about it. And medallion owners themselves, who already owned the medallion, had no idea about it. And the problem is, had this information in the Roth report been publicly disclosed and medallion owners actually knew about it, then they would have made decisions based on that material information. They would have gotten rid of their medallions and sold them while they still could. And medallion prospective buyers would never have bought medallions at those inflated prices if they knew that the TLC itself thought this market could crash. So it turned out that this report was kept hidden for 9 years, and even though it had been subpoenaed by the city council as part of those hearings in June of 2019, it turned out that TLC did not furnish this report until literally hours before the hearings began. So they had weeks to provide this report, and then all of a sudden it appeared out of the blue right before the hearing started. And the report, to me, it's damning. It is a smoking gun. It puts the city and TLC on actual notice of the imminent collapse of the market of medallions. It puts them on notice of the fact that medallions are vastly overpriced all the way back in 2010. And I think that is going to be a key piece of evidence for us in the case. And as far as I know, from what I have seen in the other lawsuits, that has never been a centerpiece of any of the lawsuits that have come before us. And in fact, I think one or two might have made a scant reference to it, but in our case, this is a central building block of the fraudulent concealment that took place by the city and TLC.
I guess we have to give Brian Rosenthal some credit for a change of the New York Times, because I believe he's the one who managed to get a hold of the Roth report. And I just want to say that, okay, even if you accept, you know, that as true, you have to think about it within the context of what happened after 2010, where the TLC flooded the streets with for hire vehicles and streamlined the licensing process and bragged about it in an article that was posted on Medium by Dawn Miller, who was Mira Zoshi's, the then TLC commissioner's chief of staff, and she was also in charge of policy. So they dumped all these cars on the street or allowed them on the street. They changed many, many, many rules to make things easier for the app companies to unleash all these cars on the street. And then they just stood back and said, oh, my God, look, the value of the medallion's going down. I mean, it was 2,000 cars a month that were flooding the streets, and everybody knew about it. Certainly anybody in New York City government, DOT, TLC, mayor's office, the law department, they all knew about it. And yet they let it happen. And now I hope they'll pay. John.
Well, I just want to say, I mean, it's a very good point. I do want to address that point, but I think it's important also to recognize that apart from what happened with Uber and Lyft and the for-hire vehicles, and again, that does need to be addressed, but apart from that, put it aside for a minute. The city and TLC were responsible for artificially inflating medallion values to an astronomical number that was completely unsustainable. And regardless of Uber and regardless of Lyft, the way they set this up, this was a house of cards that was going to collapse. And there is responsibility for that, independent of what they did, which was treacherous and outrageous, what they did with the for-hire vehicles. And there's no doubt about that was wrong. But that's separate and apart from the fact that they created an artificially inflated market for medallions that wouldn't have existed but for their fraud. They are no different than, you know, companies that go out there and artificially pump up their stocks and lie and cheat and steal and make, you know, people buy their stocks when, in fact, the stocks are absolutely worth nothing or much less. And when they conceal critical information from investors, the TLC and the city are in the same shoes, in my opinion, as those corporations that defraud people in securities actions. So I believe that, you know, that is just something that is separate and apart from the collapse of the market due to the allowing the for-hire vehicles. Now, with respect to those vehicles, I mean, it is, to this day, it is mind-boggling how TLC chose to exempt you know, all black cars from its rules subjecting e-hails to the restrictions that apply to conventional hails. I mean, it's mind-boggling how this decision was made, who actually made the decision, and when it was made. And these are things we're certainly going to be focusing on in the litigation. But when you combine the artificially pumped-up medallion values that were absolutely going to collapse per the Roth report as early as 2010, and then you add all of these other for-hire vehicles allowed to come into the market without owning medallions, without having a dispatcher, without having a base, without having any of the burdens or restrictions that medallion owners have. Yes, but it's absolutely 100% predictable results that the medallion market has crashed. But I guess my only point is that it's easier to just look at that and what happened with Uber. And I think for years people assumed, well, the market has just changed and we have all these vehicles and it's natural forces at play, when in fact it was very much artificial manipulation of the market that even created this situation in the first place. And then the lying and bending the rules and creating exemptions where none should exist, yes, that's basically the death knell, the final blow for medallions. So to me, there are several forces operating, and they work hand in hand to have created the disaster that medallion owners are now facing.
Yeah, what I wonder is, does the behavior pattern show intention, which I think it does? And I think possibly the city wanted to destroy the medallion system, and they just couldn't figure out a way how to do it that wouldn't cost them a lot of money. So
what was their
they
motive?
Allowed all these things to happen.
What was the city's motive? What do you think is their, why did they want to do this?
I mean, I've read articles, you know, going back to, like, I don't know, the 1970s, when Koch was in office and before that, that they, I don't know, because they wanted to have more cars on the street.
Well, what does John think? Why? What was their motive, do you think?
I think they just, they killed the golden goose because they sucked all the money and all the blood out of it that they could get, and they saw the writing on the wall. Once they got every last dollar they could get, including duping and ripping off people at the 2013 and 24 auctions, all of a sudden in 2015, surprise, surprise, Mira Joshi's announcing how the medallion market seems frozen. They basically took it. They took medallion owners for a ride. They sold them down the river. They took every last dollar they could. And then when there was nothing else to get, they went on to greener pastures. That's the way I see it.
Right. And this is speculation on my part, but possibly the reason why the Roth report was never released or publicized was because they thought, you know what, let's have a couple, three more auctions. Let's see what we can get out of this puppy. You know, pick the meat off the bones, and then we'll let it slide. Because, you know,
completely
they
agree,
Carolyn.
I thought the same thing.
Which I'll be reading all of your discovery, if I can, on the Pacer website.
Absolutely. It'll be a matter of public record for sure.
Has the city responded yet to your complaint?
We just heard from the attorney representing all of the city defendants last week, and she indicated she will be writing to the court seeking an extension of time to either answer or file a motion to dismiss, and that she will request until July 16th, which we've agreed to. So that's what will happen next. We will find out on July 16th whether they answer or they file a motion, and we'll then take it from there.
Is that Michelle Goldberg-Kahn or Karen Selvin or somebody else?
Exactly. It's Michelle Goldberg-Kahn.
Oh, yes.
So
I've seen her in action in court.
Okay. Maybe off the record we can have further discussion.
Yes. Yeah, you should talk to Dan Ackman about that. See what he says also about Karen, Michelle. So, Dave, you had a question?
A couple of things on my mind. So then, based on your information and the lawsuit, the upset price, the started bidding price at the last auction the TLC had for medallions was a total falsehood. If anything, knowing what they knew and to protect themselves, they could have come in at half the price, the upset price. And that, if I'm not mistaken, they started the bidding at over $800,000. Is that right, John?
I think that's the highest price, right, was $750.
I saw
we're talking about the upset price, the price that they put down, the minimum price to bid on. I believe it was $800,000.
And that was wheelchair, which were always considered less desirable.
You mentioned Abe is in a subclass as a medallion owner who could have sold for $1 million, but because he was misled, he said, you know what, this is really looking good, and things are going well, and I'm going to hang out for a little while until it's time for me to retire, and he ended up losing everything. So is there another subclass for the people? My understanding at that last auction was as much as 25% or maybe more of the purchasers who put down a $25,000 deposit actually backed out, because right after that auction, the price of the medallion started spiraling down, and those purchasers didn't want to encumber let's say 20% of 800,000. You know, they didn't want to encumber a $650,000 loan, so they just gave up the $25,000 deposit. Is that one of the subclasses?
You know, I want to know more information to definitively state that is a subclass, but it sure sounds like one. You know, it sounds like it would have all the makings of it. The question would be, what information did that subclass potentially have that other people didn't know about? I mean, that would be the one thing that I would be curious about. But that class, to the extent one would exist, would be for the loss of the $25,000 that had to be paid.
The TLC at that time had some internal bifurcation, if you will. You know, you had Matt Dawes as the chairman of the TLC and his chief of staff, and then you had an implant in there. I think his name was Andrew Salkin, and I don't know if you're aware of that gentleman. He couldn't be chief of staff. I think Iris Weinshaw got him in there, Chuck Schumer's wife, who was a member of the Taxi and Limousine Commission. And he was not a friend of the yellow industry. I mean, I recall him stating that the medallion is overpriced and, you know, concerned about how to bring the price down. But I was just curious if his name came up in your lawsuit at all.
That's something we definitely would pay attention to and follow up on. No, not yet, though.
Okay, and I guess you have a copy of the Conan Freud letter, which I've mentioned on this podcast before, that he sent out to all industry people in the industry to make this a successful auction, speaking about the last auction on TLC stationery?
No, I'd love to see it. We do not.
Carolyn, do you have a copy of that?
No. If you sent it to me, I could look through my emails.
Conan Freud. Well, it's funny because, you know, I had shredded all my documentation when I left the industry. That letter popped up again, and I think I have a copy of it. So, but Conan Freud was definitely promoting the last auction. He was kind of in charge of it. And just a point of information, and I've mentioned this on the podcast, I was at the auction fair, I guess. I don't know what you would call it. The convention, if you want to purchase a medallion at the next auction, come to this site. It was on 5th Avenue and 34th Street. And there were tables there for purchasers to ask questions of lenders, ask questions of brokers. And interestingly enough, they allowed Uber to have a table there. And I want you to be aware, John, that at that, I'll just call it an auction convention, pre-auction convention, the TLC afterwards claimed it was successful with over 500 medallion purchasers attending. I was there from the beginning to the end, and there was a line out the door. That line was only for the Uber table. If we had a handful, if we had five actual medallion purchasers come to that event, it wouldn't surprise me, because that's all I saw. All that was, all that pre-auction convention was good for was information about getting an Uber car. And I was scratching my head, and I'm like, this is definitely not a good thing. So I wanted you to be aware of that. I wanted our listeners to hear that. because the writing was kind of on the wall. Even though the TLC set an unfair upset price on the auction and everything else, they knew that there was no interest, and yet they claimed it was an overwhelming success because 500 people attended.
Dave, what year was that? Was this in 2014 or 2013?
I was working for the Melrose Taxi Action Center then, Melrose Brokerage, so it had to be 13 or 14. I'm not exactly sure.
Right, so this was regarding one of the last three auctions, which occurred in 2013 and 14, around
yes.
that time period. And there was an
yes.
Uber table there. Wow.
There was and the thing that was amazing was 99% of the people there were only there for the Uber table. Not for the lenders to find out rates on loans, not for the brokers to find out the process, not for the attorneys, and not for the car dealers. It was a big waste of time for the yellow industry. Yet, the next day I read that it was a smashing success for the yellow industry, and I just...
Right.
Terrible.
And that was billed by the TLC as a meeting or promotion of the Italian market and how you could bid in the upcoming auctions.
Right.
And how you should.
Right. It wasn't the first time they did it. Go ahead, Carolyn.
We may have lost her. According to what I'm looking at, she's still on, though.
Okay. So, well, she'll call then if she has to. So, John.
Yeah.
What type of person listening to this, if they lost their medallion, if they had to go bankrupt, if they went into foreclosure, if the bank took it from them, like I said, are you looking for more people like that to be added onto your lawsuit? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Most definitely, yes. And, to each and every caller out there, if you're listening to this and you have suffered losses as a result of, the misconduct by TLC with medallion values, we want to hear from you. And, we have a call center 24/7 that's set up with the number 212-JUSTICE. You can call, leave a message, we'll get it, we will return the call. We're very interested in hearing from each and every one of you. Not everyone would be technically joining the class as a named plaintiff. It would be a much smaller subset, perhaps another 5 to 10 plaintiffs, but just to have the information to possibly include the facts in the complaint if we were to amend the complaint, and then just to have potential sources of information as we go along to help us successfully litigate the case. I mean, we would very much welcome that. We'd like to hear from each and every person, hear what their stories are and what happened, and then decide whether or not they would be added or named as plaintiffs. But just to be clear, even if they are not added as named plaintiffs, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, if they are part of the class at the end of the day, however the court were to decide the class or subclasses, they would automatically recover unless they opted out, unless they sent in a form and said, hey, I don't want to be part of the class. So, even if we don't name them and add them as individual plaintiffs, they will be covered regardless. But from our standpoint, we're still very much in the investigative stage. And the more people that call in, the more information that we have, the better we are, the better all of the plaintiffs will be, the stronger the lawsuit will be, and the greater the likelihood will be that we win. So, yes, I encourage it.
So, once again, that's 212-JUSTICE. If you were forced into bankruptcy, if your lender foreclosed on your medallion, if you purchased a medallion at an auction for $800,000, and I know there are a lot of you there, and you drove it 7 days a week or whatever the deal was, and after a year or two you realize, I just can't make any money, I can't afford this, and you had to give it up, okay, call 212-JUSTICE. These are the people who can help you.
Okay, I believe Carolyn is back. Are you back,
yes,
Carolyn?
Back. Yes.
Go ahead, Carolyn.
No, I don't know what happens. Every time I say something really bad about the TLC, I get cut off. Probably you've noticed that. Very strange.
Just a coincidence.
But I never have anything good to say about the TLC.
I used to like the TLC once upon a time, you know. But
to license cars, drivers, and to protect the yellow taxi franchise. That was their job. And now they've expanded into like a social service network where you go for bankruptcy advice and foreclosure advice and food stamps and unemployment insurance and food delivery and, you know,
mental
all kinds care. Of things. Right. Mental health care. Yes, they're very big on mental health care. But, you know, none of that would have happened had they not helped to destroy the franchise.
Former Commissioner Chris Lynn has recommended that the TLC should be disbanded and shut down. Any thoughts on that, John?
Well, you know, it would be great. They should be shut down. They after what they've done, which really are very close to criminal acts. I mean, they don't have any right to continue, and I wish they would be shut down. But the problem with it is it doesn't deal with all the harm that they've already done. It just stops them from doing additional harm in the future. And, you know, their work has been done. They've caused enormous damage, irreversible permanent damage to thousands of medallion owners. So, you know, disbanding them at this point would only get us so far. We really have to work backwards and make them accountable and make the city of New York accountable for what harm has already been done.
You said criminal acts. Can you be specific, even if they're redundant?
So the RICO statute itself is based, it's a civil statute, but it's based on criminal conduct. And essentially what the statute requires is a showing of a pattern of racketeering activity over a 10-year period, repeated acts. And we have that in this case. We have multiple distinct acts that are improper and unlawful, such as using grossly inflated upset prices for medallions, which are completely untethered to the market, and where they lied about it and claimed that it was based on actual sales transactions when it wasn't. We have collusive bidding taking place at the TLC medallion auctions from 2004 to 2006, where the OMB complained to TLC, the New York City Law Department complained to TLC, but Charles Fraser, who's the defendant in this case, was confronted with the evidence of collusion and simply said, yes, it appeared to be in a scam at first glance. And yet he just turned the other way and allowed the city to get all of the benefits of this collusive bidding, which impacted not only those auctions at 2004 to 2006, but because of the inflation that the collusion led to at those auctions, those inflated prices continue to permeate the market for medallions all the way through the class period till 2014. Another fraudulent act, the TLC multiple times and repeatedly issued false and misleading average monthly sales data for medallion transactions, where they essentially lied to the public at large and to prospective investors and medallion owners by leaving out the outliers, quote unquote, the lower transactions that would bring down the average sales value. So what they did by a true sleight of hand is they just took every transaction that fell 10% or more below what they considered the actual market value of a medallion at that time. They simply excluded those records. They kept those records and those sales away from the public and away from medallion owners at large. And to be clear, this was not an accident. This wasn't something that happened, you know, by chance. Alan Fromberg actually disclosed in an email in October 2013 that this was, quote, a conscious decision, end quote, by the TLC. And this was a longstanding policy. So that's another fraudulent act. Another fraudulent act is the concealment of the Roth report, which was willful, knowing, deliberate, and intentional. And it was definitely done for the purpose of hiding the truth from prospective medallion owners who would buy medallions and also for even existing medallion owners. And to top it all off, they had false, misleading, and dishonest series of advertising campaigns about medallions, where it was so bad and so misleading that according to the article, which Carolyn had alluded before, Brian Rosenthal, who does deserve his props, by the way, I will give him that. According to his article, there were not one, not two, not three, but seven different TLC employees that he interviewed that had actually made internal complaints to the TLC that these ads were false and misleading and deceiving prospective buyers. So my answer to your question is not any one thing. It's all of those things put together. Those are quasi-criminal acts. They're fraud, and the law recognizes fraud that is perpetrated by use of electronic means, such as emails, such as publications, and things of that nature can constitute wire fraud and mail fraud. And that's where the RICO statute comes in, and that's where the predicate criminal acts or racketeering activity come in.
Can people be charged with crimes with this lawsuit succeeding?
You mean in addition to monetary?
Yeah. Yes.
No.
In addition.
The short answer is no. This is a strictly a civil lawsuit, and even if they were found guilty, as they should be, of multiple RICO violations, there would be no penalty in terms of criminal charges or anything like that. I think that ship has long since sailed. The only reason we're allowed to do this now is what I said before, just because of the inquiry notice for a civil claim. But the criminal claim would be barred at this point.
I think we're making news here, Abe.
I do.
These allegations, whether they're fact or not, you're innocent until proven guilty, but it pretty much sounds like it's fact. I mean, attorneys, John and his law firm certainly aren't going to waste their time on nonsense, in the words of two medallion owners. My gosh, I'm speechless.
Well, I'm kind of glad that this finally happened. It was bound to happen. Okay?
It's long overdue, thanks to Letitia James, our Attorney General for New York State, who, acted like she was actually going to do something a year and a half ago and then did nothing other than write a letter.
You know, I'm curious about that. The Department of Finance, On all deals, you needed a Department of Finance letter. And that was the last thing because it took the longest to get on every medallion transfer. And they were reluctant or they wouldn't issue a letter if it was $10,000, if the sale price was $10,000 less than the highest price from the month before. So in essence, it seemed to me that in order to get those Department of Finance letters from the city agency, you had to overpay for the medallion. Does that sound right, John?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I mean, and that is very much, part of it. In fact, Ross himself alluded to that, that the city does play a role. And just precisely on the point that you just made, that the Department of Finance has to give these approvals. So they're certainly, very much complicit in the wrongdoing that took place. And they're very much complicit in continuing to artificially inflate the market, because if they're not willing to issue those letters for things that fall below the magic number that they want, they're in effect, they're controlling that number, artificially sustaining a number that's pumped up and too high, but they're making it impossible for people to do transactions unless they agree to that number.
Carolyn, do you know where Andrew Salkin and Samara went, which agency, after they left the TLC?
What was the name of the second person?
Samara Epstein.
I've never heard either of those names except just, lately from what you've told me.
Well, it's very possible that both of them went to the Department of Finance. Isn't that interesting?
That would be very interesting.
Maybe they're on LinkedIn. You could take a look.
Detective Protz at it again.
I try to keep following the careers of those who have left the TLC. That's a whole story itself.
In the spirit of transparency, as the cliche goes, Yeah, I was part of the Melrose lawsuit against the TLC regarding Uber and the street hails. And you're probably aware of that, John. And it really went nowhere. But that smoking gun, that Gary Roth letter, I didn't realize how important that is and why. And now I see why the TLC was reluctant to give it up.
Yeah, that tells you a lot. Just the fact that they concealed it and then up to the day of that hearing in 2019, June of 2019.
It might have reversed other lawsuits.
Yeah. Right. But they evidently they wanted to conceal it. Otherwise, you know, they would have found it before 2 hours before the hearing at the city council.
The TLC and city agencies always love saying, oh, we can do this because it's for the safety of, you know, the constituents of New York City, the residents of New York City. We can do this. It's, you know, it's for safety. And what you can't do is do something for safety and then commit crimes to get people's money in the billions of dollars. You know, or in this one case, you know, almost $1 billion in medallion sales. And I just have to stress again, if you've been foreclosed on by your lender, if you've been forced into bankruptcy, if you lost your life savings, your credit cards, your deposits that you put down on medallions, while you were off the line, Carolyn, John was kind enough to tell us he has a number for those folks to call in, 212-JUSTICE.
That's great. That's perfect. No, everyone will remember that. And I guess we strongly encourage people to call. The more, the merrier, Mirazoshi liked to say.
Let me give the numbers for justice. Would be 212-J. I'm sorry, J would be 58 JUS 7.
I can do it by memory. It's 587-8423, but you can double check it. Make sure I'm right. 587-8423, I believe.
Okay. Well. It's justice.
Someone,
in any case,
should double check it though.
Well, I'll analyze it right now. I have the keyboard in front of me.
And by the way, John, the TLC, I'm sure, has lists of every medallion that changed ownership due to foreclosures and every bankruptcy notice they receive. So I'm sure they'd be forthcoming with all that information for you.
No doubt, and we would certainly be asking for that as soon as discovery begins in this case. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're looking forward as the case progresses. It's going to be very interesting to see how the city reacts to this.
Yeah, and can you keep us informed?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would very much like to keep you informed and your listeners. And, you know, we absolutely will be fighting this case tooth and nail. This is not a situation like A.T. James, and we give her enormous credit for just bringing forward this issue and at least putting the spotlight on it. But this is not a situation where 6 months from now you're going to read about how we just quit the lawsuit. This is not easy. It's hard. But we're prepared. We're rolling up our sleeves. We're prepared to fight this out to the bitter end. If the judge, for some reason, throws the case out, we'll take it up on appeal. We're not rolling over and just letting this go by. Like this. It's outrageous what TLC did, and it's outrageous what the city did, and the fact that they have never once ever been held accountable for destroying so many lives is an absolute outrage. And we're going to do everything in our power with all of the passion, all the energy we can bring to this case to make sure that everybody gets justice for what happened.
And speaking of justice, I've analyzed it, and it's 212-587-8423.
What about the $65 million that the city wants to give medallion owners? Where does that fit into this lawsuit?
But to me, that's a joke. I mean, you know, it's almost insulting. I mean, what would that do if someone owes $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 or more? What is that going to do? And it just doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of the enormous damages that have been done. Look, if someone wants to do that and somehow they can restructure their loan and make it less onerous, we recommend that. We have no problem with it in terms of it. And it has no impact in terms of whether they could be a member of the class because they would still have staggering losses that go well beyond whatever restructuring would be done. But my problem with it is it's just a tiny, tiny gesture, almost symbolic. It doesn't materially change or undo the vast amount of harm that's been done. So that's my problem with it. And I just feel like, you know, the city, would have been pleading poverty with COVID and all of this, but the reality is now, because of the stimulus plan, the city is doing quite well, and they need now to pay back the people and you know, compensate them for all the destruction and harm that they've done. And $65 million is just a barely a tiny drop in the bucket, in my opinion.
Especially since there are 13,587 medallions. Carolyn, at last count, or the last time you checked, approximately how many medallions were not servicing the people of New York and, as we say, on the shelf at the TLC due to the fact that there were no drivers and no business at this point?
I don't know if they're all technically on the shelf, because that's a special situation where your license is in suspension for the time being. But, I mean, the amount of cars that are just off the road is staggering. I mean, it must be 6,000 or 7,000 cars, at least.
Last I heard was 7,000 off the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last time there may be 5,000 on the road on a daily basis, and there was 4,000 that could be on the road. I don't know. It's most of the majority of the cabs are not on the road at the moment. But getting back to the $65 million, that's a loan also. It's not that they're giving anybody money, although maybe they'll forgive it at some point, but technically it's a loan. And the other thing is, I haven't seen any of the agreements, and I don't know if anybody's actually gotten a hold of the $20,000 plus the $9,000 that maybe they'll qualify for. But I wonder if in that agreement it says, oh, by the way, you agree you're not going to ever sue the city. I wonder. I wouldn't
That's right.
Ask
they,
them.
They should make it part of, if you have to sign to get that loan, part of the $65 million, they should submit, I don't know what you call it in legal terms, the fact that there's a lawsuit going on, which could get you more money, possibly.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they have a whole bunch of lawyers working with medallion owners. I think it was through a federal grant, possibly. I think those lawyers should be told to direct medallion owners towards John Nuremberg's lawsuit. But something tells me they're not going to be doing that.
Well,
but
we'll
do our
that.
Best to get the word out.
Yeah, we're doing that.
Excellent.
Okay. I imagine that this conversation that we've been having for the last almost an hour now will be listened to a few thousand times, okay? Because we have Gab, Gab sessions that don't say much sometimes, but we get that many listeners. And once the word gets out of what we're talking about, like Dave said, we might be making news here. Okay. So I'm not going to give the newspapers my phone number. Okay. And I don't want to talk to them. I'll just refer anybody to John Nuremberg. Okay.
Good.
I'll tell you something interesting. I get emails from the Daily News every day because I became a subscriber so I could read the articles about the taxi business. And I've gotten emails from them several times in the last couple of weeks. Read the most popular story. And I look at it, and it's the story about Tish James dropping the lawsuit from February. And that's showing up as something that people are reading intensively now, which I find very interesting.
Why do you think she dropped the lawsuit?
Who, me?
Against the city.
John.
Anybody.
I will tell you again, I mean, I give her props for just bringing it in the first place, but you have to question whether there was ever really an intention to pursue it, or was it simply something to bring this matter to the public's attention. It did coincide with really, within 1 month after she filed, I mean, COVID really hit the city and everything shut down, and maybe that was part of it too. Also, she's filing, her claims were all under state law, and there are definitely different rules regarding statute of limitations as opposed to the federal claims and the inquiry notice. So maybe that was a factor as well. We really don't know. I can tell you this much, to the extent that we are able to, we are going to subpoena the entire investigative file during discovery and find out exactly who they spoke to and what they knew, you know, and that'll help us no matter what. So maybe even if she couldn't pursue these claims directly, indirectly, the investigation that she did conduct should be very helpful in our lawsuit as well.
And I guess the city knows that. If they didn't, they know it now.
They would know right away. Believe me, there would be no surprise. I mean, that would literally be one of the very first subpoenas that goes out in terms of discovery on this case.
Looking forward to reading that, too. The entire investigatory file for the state attorney general.
Yep.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's going to be fascinating.
You have something to look forward to, Carolyn.
Yes.
How long do you think a lawsuit like this will linger in the courts before anything is decided?
You know, I mean, I've handled several big class actions before. I mean, you know, unfortunately, the answer is more in the nature of years than in days and months. And you just have to be prepared. I mean, this thing is a big battle. They're not going to just sit there and take it. They're going to fight back aggressively, and they're going to delay things and slow things down, which they always do. So, you know, it's going to take a while, but it has to start somewhere. It has to start somewhere. And that was my whole mantra in my head when I was drafting the complaint, is it has to start somewhere. There has to be a starting point. And at least we've gotten it underway. Next stop is aggressive litigation and try to get as much discovery as we can to support the claims.
Let me say this. I just turned 73 years old, okay? I first stepped
Happy
into
birthday.
A New York City taxi. Happy birthday. I first stepped into a New York City taxi cab to earn a living when I was 22 years old, okay? So I've been around a while, okay? I think I'm in good health, okay, except for type 2 diabetes, which I have under control, okay? And if you looked at me, you'd think I'm only in my 50s, okay? But that's the secret of not having any children. So you stay young, okay? However, say I don't make it to 80, okay? And the lawsuit is still in limbo, or hasn't been decided yet. Can I be part of this lawsuit and name a beneficiary?
You know, the short answer is yes. I mean, your estate, God willing, you'll be around and you can see this to a conclusion. But if you were not, this is an asset that would belong to your estate, and whoever would be the administrator would essentially step in and legally in your shoes and continue and receive the benefits that you would have received. So that's the short answer.
So that sounds
Your claim would not be extinguished just because you were not personally around.
So the survivors of those medallion owners who committed suicide could be part of this?
They could be. They would have to be named as administrators of the respective estates. And yes, absolutely. They would step in the shoes of their loved ones. Absolutely.
God, this gets worse and worse for the TLC. You know, you've really touched a nerve here, John.
Good. I think that's a good thing.
Great angle.
Somebody had to do it.
Right. And many of them are probably just counting the days until this administration is done, thinking, I'll get out of this. But you're not out of it. even if you leave your job, you're still not out of it. Right, John?
Exactly. Believe me, that will not end their problems, even if they go somewhere else. We will subpoena them. We'll take their depositions. We'll demand discovery. It's definitely not going to end just because they leave and work somewhere else.
Well, good luck, John, with this lawsuit, and Godspeed, as they say.
Yeah.
Thanks so much,
forward to following it.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. So listen, it sounds like, I'm sorry, but I just want to say, it sounds like we've covered as much as we want to cover right now, John. Okay, if you want to give any closing thoughts, you know, do it now. Okay, or you know, but keep in touch with us, and you know, you're welcome to come on anytime you think that you have some news to report.
Closing
That's
comments,
great.
Counselor.
Well, I will tell you that again. You know, we feel honored to represent this class. You know, we feel very passionate about the lawsuit. There's a tremendous wrong that has been done, these medallion owners, for no fault, through no fault of their own. And what has taken place is absolutely an outrage. It's a borderline criminal act that needs to be fixed to the best way we can, and that's what our case is about. We will finish the job that A.G. James started. We're not going to just lie down. We will continue this fight. And I do believe that we represent the last best chance for medallion owners to finally get justice. And I'm going to do everything in my power to see to it, to make sure that happens.
Sounds good to me.
All right. And I just want to throw this in. I think we're ending now. Don't forget, there's a website, taxiliverytimes.com, taxiliverytimes.com. As the lawsuit progresses, you know, we will have the Cranes article about this lawsuit in our next edition, or it may be in this edition. You can check it out at taxiliverytimes.com. And I want to thank Abe for having me on his podcast as well.
Well, Dave, you belong here.
Where else would you go?
And Carolyn, you belong here. And I'm very happy that I started this website going on 7 years ago. Okay? Boy, how time flies. All right? Because nowhere is there a place where people are going to hear something like this for now.
Right.
I mean, perhaps John will, after the networks hear this, may want John to come on and talk. Okay. No, nothing else to say. Okay. I'm going to say thanks for listening to everybody. Okay. And let's hope for the best. You know, hang in there.
Right.
Okay.
I got to go now.
Dave, go ahead.
Taxi!
I'll be right there. Okay, thanks, John. Thanks, Carolyn.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye, everyone.